This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor with Professor Richard Epstein. We're looking at the Sherman Antitrust Act of 1890, 19th century law, that in its many iterations is here today in the concern of the Biden administration, not only about the power of firms to set prices, not only about the firms that consume or eat up or merge with smaller firms in order to deny competition at the marketplace, but also about the power of firms to suppress wages. And that is a major concern for everyone now, with these talk of the middle class falling behind, with wage growth not keeping up with inflation and the demands of the marketplace. However, I learned from Richard, I did not know this, that progressive economists believe that the monopsony power suppresses wages 10%. Have I said that correctly, Richard?
Yes, and it's an astonishing number because it's extremely high. Even organized unions can't raise wages by that amount, and so it's kind of hardly odd. The other point to make about this is all these studies are sort of about data that was collected 3 or 4 years ago of necessity. If you look at the current headlines, wages are going way up. They have the following odd situation: firms desperate to hire people, and huge numbers of people sitting on the sideline, so that they're a record number of vacant positions, usually with fairly high skill levels associated with them. And that doesn't look like a kind of a market that we have with an oligopoly. Monopsony providers essentially are turning away workers, right, because they want to hire a few of them. Now they're begging to get employees. So clearly something has happened in the market. And in general, what's wrong with this antitrust literature is it ignores all of these other powerful trends which influence wages. Unemployment benefits make a huge difference. You give people $300 a week to stay out of the labor force, it's going to have some really powerful situations. If you have unions, that's going to change the ability of an employer to deal with them. And the serious studies on this all indicate that the ability to extract these monopsony rents from these workers is effectively compromised if you get unions on the other side. You then look at the bewildering range of kinds of positions of licensing restrictions going from one business to another, and you try to say, with all of these crazy complications going on, that you could attribute this effect to an antitrust situation. It's just wildly overspecifying it. The rate of turnover in firms is very high, and it turns out that the major, if you look at the recent employment and management manuals, they all say the same thing. How do we manage to retain the workers that we already have and recruit new ones whom we can keep? If you lose a given worker who's experienced, you're going to have to hire a headhunter in order to replace them or put together an internal team to do so, and that could cost you 6 to 9 months of wages or even more. People don't want to lose workers under these circumstances. If they were oligopolists, you'd say, oh my God, these monopsony guys, get rid of these. We need fewer workers. So if people want to quit, that's fine. It just doesn't look like that. When there are markets that are really bad, what you see is that the number of people fired will be 5 times the number of people hired. And when the market is good, the number of people they're looking for, they're going to find 5 times the number of quits as the time as the number of people who are fired. You know, you get these hugely volatile shifts. That's not consistent with any oligopoly model, any monopsony model. What it is a situation is the variations that take place in competitive markets when it turns out that conditions change because of exogenous
circumstances. I want to give an example of conditions changing. You're an energy company, BP or Exxon, and in the present political conversation around the world, shifting to green or de-emphasizing your fossil fuel base is wise. What that means is you've got a workforce that is not appropriate to where you are going or where your customers and your national governments want you to go. So you need to divest of, is that the right word? Divest of the labor that is devoted to fossil fuel and hire labor that is appropriate to green innovation. Now,
well, you certainly have to change specifications, yes. And it turns out sometimes you don't have to hire and fire. There's also subcontracting. An extremely important phenomenon is you used to subcontract to a company that was expert in fossil fuels. Now your subcontracts go to somebody who knows about wind or solar energy. And again, all of these models assume that everybody who works for you is an employee. They don't worry about independent contractors, including firms, not only individuals, who take up part of your work.
Well, the labor market is very comfortable. My general opinion from the reading is that labor unions, private labor unions as well as municipal labor unions, are very suspicious of the idea of contracting out because it avoids their protections of their workers. Isn't that correct?
It is absolutely correct. This goes back a very long time because the moment you can subcontract out, if a union gets too tough on its demands, what you'll do is you'll hire a substitute firm. And there was a case called Fiberboard decided around 1964 or so, which said that unions have the right to insist that these subcontracting issues be subject to collective bargaining agreements. But in some cases, this work is already contracted out, so it's not a union issue. It's just you have to change subcontractors, and since there are no union stakes there, there could be a high turnover. It's also, even if you're in fossil fuels, you know, you get a new technology, now you have to change the kind of workforce. A very simple point I think makes this, we hear things said that, oh, this year we created a million new, or month we created a million new jobs. That's false. What we probably created was 8 million new jobs and lost 7 million jobs. That is, the turnover ratio is not the difference between the number of people hired and the number of people who left. It's the sum of the two things. And labor markets are much more dynamic than the simple number gets you. And this dynamism is inconsistent with the monopsony model.
The Biden administration is concerned about the survivability and the success of the unions we have. Municipal Yep. unions, public unions, well, but private unions, Richard, and it is undeniable that private unions have been shrinking for decades now. Can they reverse that with this antitrust concentration on labor markets?
No, I don't think they can. First of all, I mean, if you do have a union involved in this, you're not going to find real changes in wage levels. The unions will counteract what the employers do. But more importantly, the economy is much too dynamic for any of these static arrangements to actually work. So, for example, if you take what we talk about, the merger, you're making gasoline. You're going to be making gasoline for the next 10 or 20 years. So what you do today is going to be a pretty accurate projection of what's going to happen in the future. But if you look at the workforce, it turns out that that's going to have to be turned over many times like this because the technology of production are going to change much more rapidly than the product that you're ultimately selling. And so therefore, when you try to do a merger and you know what the current workforce looks like, it's highly unlikely that 2 years from now you'd have that same mix. There's going to be something moving here, there, or the other place in all the ways that I started to mention. It's also that, generally speaking, when you're dealing with the regulation of labor markets, much of this is done at the state and local level. Some of it is done internationally. And so if you're trying to figure out what is or is not an appropriate wage level, you have to do it jurisdiction by jurisdiction, whereas when you're dealing with the sale of oil, generally speaking, it's a much easier inquiry. So in theory, a monopsony could be as bad as a monopoly. In practice, it's much more likely that you'll find a monopoly in the sale of a single fungible product than you will find some mysterious monopsony product in the hiring of all sorts of different kinds of people with different labor mixes. The turnover rates are too high. The job classifications differ too much. Subcontracting out, even with unions, is a very real possibility. The dynamism essentially makes the static inquiry essentially a mistake. And what they ought to do is keep to the current practice.
Then antitrust division acting head Richard Powers' ambition to apply antitrust to the unions, to the labor, is going to result in very little change, if I hear you correctly. We have about
Well, it should, but you know, one of the things to remember, John, is the power to investigate is the power to destroy. So if you now start to say that for every union, rather for every merger, you have to have a detailed section on labor effects and labor markets, that could slow things down by, you know, 6 months or a year. It could require you to spend many millions of dollars. And those costs and time and money could be enough to shipwreck a transaction. And make no mistake about it.
In
the Biden administration today, and Amy Klobuchar bills referring, there's a real suspicion about merger activities as essentially taking small competitors, destroying them before they could become big competitors. And so they're anti-mergers, and they don't want big companies to take it. This is such a change in the way the market operates that it could easily make it less likely for companies to form, because one of the reasons why you form a small company is hope to be bought out by a larger one. So this could be a genuine shipwreck.
Richard Epstein, Professor Richard Epstein, a senior fellow at the Hoover Institution, writing about labor markets and antitrust at Defining Ideas. This is CBSI in the World. I'm John Batchelor.
You're listening to CBSI on the World with John Batchelor.